Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Did You Know? Success leaves footprints, but one item that we find is that many times certain categories of information are withheld. And it seems as if there are categories of information that are withheld. One of those is achievements, particularly of black, minority, females, and other people, as if people don't realize that these stories can inspire and motivate other people, not necessarily of that particular category, of gender or race or religion or what have you. They can enter the world. I went through life primarily hating history, hating it with a passion. And that was because it involved people that I had no connection to in any way. Generally, they were people in some distant place that I never intended to visit, to find out about, and I had no interest there. Many people today find themselves influenced by similar situations. And I'll tell you, many times we find that certain topics in history are avoided. When we look at Berkeley County, South Carolina, they recently elected members of Moms for Liberty. And what did they do? These were white housewives, and I have nothing against white people, have nothing against women. But their first action was to fire the black superintendent and also another person in a responsible administrative position. And part of it comes around to the fact that none of these people want black history taught. Why? I don't know the answer to that. I can suppose through their minds. And it probably goes something like this. Let sleeping dogs lie. When you end up getting a splinter in your finger, if you don't take it out, it festers. And next thing you have to do is basically dig it out. And sometimes it gets to the point where a doctor has to remove the object because it's invaded the body. It's infected the body. And if not treated, will kill the body. Making the transition from that to what is taking place in history is often a giant leap. And we see this, and we're going to see some of the impact of such a story today as we talk about Jane Bolin, J-A-N-E-B-O-L-I-N. Now, many of you may have read my post this week, and that post is on AmazingBlackHistory.com, AmazingBlackHistory.com. And the person is Jane Bolin, and she was the first black female judge in the United States of America. At some point in time, there has to be a first. But we see in the case of people of color, sometimes women, sometimes religious groups, what have you, it is not based on the quality of what they do. Oftentimes, it's influenced by what they look like and what people suppose about them. And we're going to get into that kernel of truth, to see where people are often steered away from following their passion. This happened to Jane, and we will talk about that. Now, let me bring you up to speed. If you've not been listening to the program before, or if you have, there are two ways to listen to the show, one of which is to call in, and I've started putting that information on the AmazingBlackHistory.com, the post that we're going to use. Normally those posts are put up on Thursday. This week they did not go up until Friday because of technical difficulties, lack of internet access. And I find that at least for the last 2 days, I have not had internet. Still don't have it. I'm using my cell phone and a hotspot. And today I've had several power outages, glitches, because they have not been very long. But we'll do our best to stay on the air today. I am broadcasting using my cell phone and using my that same cell phone as a hotspot. If you are listening on a device and have used the link to get to us, great. I love you and want you to share the information with others. I want you to learn. The only reason I'm giving you this information is because in order to communicate, if you have questions, comments, suggestions, later in the program, there will be an opportunity to get answers, leave comments, or what have you. And that would be by calling in. Many of you have that number, but I will give it to you. 646-668-8217. Again, that number is 646-668-8217. Now, again, the only reason that you need to do that, you can still listen to the program, is that you may have a comment, question, suggestion, or what have you later in the program. You can hear it, but if you call in and you're on a cell phone, generally there is a little icon with a microphone and a slash on it. If you would hit that, that mutes your phone. And let me explain what that means. That means that we cannot hear what's going on in the background. Many times people are unaware of the ambient noise in their home. Kids running around, pots and pans rattling, trains roaring by, traffic, what have you. This prevents that from disrupting what other people are hearing and contributing to background sounds. If you're calling in on a regular phone, star 6 in most cases mutes the phone. You can still hear the program. To reverse that, if you're called upon or when you're called upon, you just reverse that procedure on a cell phone. You tap that icon, it goes out, and we can then hear you. But be aware that the background noise or background sounds are still there. The same on a phone, star 6, mutes and unmutes. And so with that, this is just a courtesy to other people that may be listening. And as we move forward with this program, I'm going to describe some of the things that happened to Jane Boland. She was born in a funny-sounding name, Poughkeepsie, New York. Poughkeepsie, New York. Her father was a lawyer, a black lawyer. Her mother was a white immigrant. Now, because of what we have been told, and in many cases there's truth in the information that gets passed down, but it seems as if most people only believe that a mixed child comes from a white father and a black mother. But there are many, many cases on record since slaves have been imported and indentured servants have been brought to this country, that the reverse has also been true, that white women married black men, vice versa. And many people come that way. My particular comment is, what difference does it make? We are people. And as people, we should be respected as people. And so it doesn't make any difference. Part of the reason that slavery began to follow the womb is technically what basically what the policy is that any child born to a mother who is enslaved belongs to the person who has her enslaved. That is money in their pocket. We often look at people as being human beings, but there were so many people that did not consider them full human beings. They were chattel property. In many cases, they could be used to pay debts. Now, along the way, it gets a little bit complicated because at one time they were considered real estate. People were considered real estate. And in some limited locations, they went with the property. You couldn't sell your slave and not sell your property. And that made a big difference in many cases. By not giving us the full and complete story, we are building on a legacy that is not true. If you were a builder, what you try to do is get a point at which you can level things off. If your house, a home, a business, a building is on property that's not level, either you level the land or you make compensation for that because your floors need to be level. The windows, everything else are based on perpendicular, horizontal, throughout. But what we're doing is we're talking about a history that is neither. It's not built on a solid foundation. In other words, to be quite frank about it, much of our history is built on lies. And lies can be information that's passed on knowing that it's wrong. It can also be information passed on that you may not, but is wrong. And rather than accuse people of doing nefarious things, at this point, let's just say that they don't know any better. And they don't know any better because they weren't taught any better. We have tried to sweep the entire issue of race under the rug. And we teach that from an early, early age. I was telling a story on here a few episodes back. Now, to those of you that are listening, you can go back and hear episodes by going to crowntalkingdrums.com and looking at the programs. The program that you're listening to now is Did You Know? And my name is John C. Abercrombie. I do have another show that comes on Thursdays, but it is designed for entrepreneurs, business people, people who want to become successful on their own. This would be a perfect show to do that because Jane Bolin grew up around the law, wanted to pursue the law, but was definitely discouraged from doing so because of her color and because of her gender. Listen at that again, because of her color and her gender. There were many jobs that were supposedly male jobs, law being one of them. And many women, capable women, were discouraged. Many people from other racial and ethnic groups were also discouraged because the typical picture that we have, and if you look back at many of the pictures that we have been exposed to, they're all white men. Did white men have a monopoly on brains, thinking, compassion, any human quality? No, they did not. But because of the stereotypes we've placed up, we often place women in roles of taking care of the house, domestic chores, and such. We don't often see the sparkling examples of people that have absolutely amazed and changed the world. We've talked previously about Ray Murgatroyd. Ray Murgatroyd wanted to become an engineer at the age of 8 because she was exposed to a German submarine the wrong way down a periscope and saw the inside of that submarine, the dials, the other sophisticated scientific equipment, and said, what does it take to do that? And she was told an engineer. But although she excelled in school, she was in Arkansas, I believe, and there was no college-level courses that she could take that would get her into engineering. They had them in the colleges there, but not in those that accepted blacks. Schools were strictly segregated. Black school, white school, black school, white school. And they did not mix. And this dissuaded many people because they didn't have exposure to many different occupations. I marvel at people that I see that take what education they have and can perform with that. I had a dear friend that was killed in the Washington, D.C. area a couple of years back. He hadn't been to college, but he could fix things. He could translate what he knew into action. My garage door was broken, and it was going to cost hundreds of dollars to fix. Took him just a few minutes to fix, and it has worked properly ever since. I hope I'm not jinxing it, but it's worked properly ever since. Many of you listening have that same capability. Now, there were laws passed in this country designed to prevent black people from reading, learning to read and write, because I have an expression that I like to use. You cannot enslave the body of a person whose mind is free. This is what education gives us, that freedom. This is part of the reason that nobody wanted us to learn to read or write. Also, eloquence has been all along and interspersed, but you keep that hidden. We find out, and I found some information that was quite shocking to me the other day. Race was something that was invented in the terms of what we know now. It used to be that if you were born in a country, you were a person of that country, irregardless of race. And we find that in the 1500s, that Gomez de Zurara was commissioned to write on the subject. And what he did was write that all Africans were backwards, incapable of learning anything, of any intelligence. And this is the legacy that we are dealing with today. But let's look at one of our founding fathers. Benjamin Franklin had that same idea that we could not learn, that we were subservient, that all we could do basically was pick Master's cotton. Benjamin Franklin's wife worked in schools, and he visited one time and saw the intellectual capabilities of black people, and he changed his mind and said that they were equal to any that he had ever seen, equal to any he had ever seen. I want you to be aware of that. This is not just a pep talk for black people. It is also an understanding for people of all races, creeds, colors, origins, or what have you. Why? Because we're on a team. That team is to become experts, to lead the world. But you can't do that if you don't trust all of your team members. So what has that done? Many outstanding people are left out of the team. Don't even try for it. Don't you dare. And this has been upheld. There are so many activities that have taken place that have involved the United States of America's government that have harmed people in America. When we look at Jane Boland, we see a very interesting history. She was appointed a black female judge. She was the only one in America for 20 years, 20 years before we ever got another. Now, this is important because as we often look in books, we're sometimes inspired by the story of others. And it's not strictly a racial basis. But I started on this journey because I wanted to help people succeed and realize that every example of people succeeding always went back generally to a white male. Now what happens? Most of the people in this country are female. They're left out. A large number of people are of ethnic minorities. They are left out. And so I started on seeking those sources that would serve to inspire everybody that we have a team here, and we should be inclusive of that team. And so when now her father, Gassius Boland, was a lawyer and the first black person to graduate from Williams College. Her mother was a British immigrant from the British Isles, and Jane was born in Poughkeepsie, New York. And she was born there on April the 11th of 1908, long time ago. Her mother died when she was 8 years old, and her father continued to practice for years and take care of her. He was the first black president of the County Bar Association. Now, we sometimes hear about bar associations. What are they? They basically determine how and what lawyers should do, ethics, everything else. While we have not talked about Matthew Perry, he was a lawyer in South Carolina that rose to the position of judge, I believe a federal judge in South Carolina before his death. I knew him as a kid. I was aware, not very aware because I wasn't aware of much when I was a kid, but he fought civil rights. He was talking about when he first started practicing. He had good cases. He went before the judge, and the judge always ruled against him. And he had one client, and again, the judge ruled against him. The laws at that time said that you must file a brief at that point, and it's what I've always called him. Handed in the papers for the appeal, typewritten, beautifully done. And the judge said, how did you know to do this? As if he is some idiot somewhere. And he said, I've had X number of cases before you, and you ruled against me every time. Now, prior to Perry graduating from the University of South Carolina School of Law, anybody that graduated the school was assumed sufficiently equipped to practice law. When Perry graduated, they inserted the bar exam. He sometimes joked that he's the reason that these lawyers have to pass the bar exam. Because in many cases, we see roadblocks. If they're not there, they're put there for a purpose. And this is what happened in his particular case. And so we see that Jane has been around the law all the time, in her father's office, at home, wherever. And these are situations that in many times influence people to follow a particular path in law. I'm sure that he was very good. I'm sure that he won cases. I'm sure that she was able to see the benefit of practicing the law. And so she had a jump start, if you will, on many of us. Now, as we're going through intimidation tactics, lynching was one of them. People were lynched. That means they didn't have a trial. There was nobody to swear testimony against them except maybe an accuser. And we, as we look back, we see that many of them are wrong. Oftentimes, these people were publicly hanged. And it was a family gathering where mother, father, children sat around and basically celebrated watching a person be killed. Afterwards, sometimes even before, they were set on fire. Many times their bodies were riddled with hundreds of bullets, and people took, I guess, pleasure out of this. But there is a reason that we have law, that we practice law, that we try to make things better for people. Many times the bodies were mutilated, and fingers and whatever were sold as souvenirs. Oh, grand, grand event. We don't even do that with dogs in this country, but yet it was acceptable there. And so many people came up from as children seeing this type of carnage. After high school, she was prevented from enrolling in Vassar College on the basis of her skin color. She enrolled in Wellesley in Massachusetts, and she was 16 at the time. There were only two black freshmen in the entire class. This wasn't because people couldn't learn. It was because doors were being shut. Stand that not only did that door get shut on that individual, but that affected people in that lineage, in that time, in that proximity. So whereas people could be role models, could help people get on their true path, it was not happening because institutional racism prevented that from happening. And so we see that she goes to Wellesley, and teachers and career advisors had discouraged her from even applying. And when she graduated from Wellesley, the same thing happened because she was discouraged from even applying to the Yale School of Law. And she was accepted in 1931. So we're seeing that even fairly recently, less than 100 years ago, people were prevented from following paths of excellence. Not because they couldn't, but because of something as flimsy as the color of their skin, the texture of their hair, the way that they looked, the way that somebody else thought they would perform. Someone else, not them. But when you run into that roadblock and you turn and go a different direction and you find the same thing and you find it over and over and over and over and over and over again, many times people become discouraged. And this is not just for people of color. It's not just for women. But we see so much of this. Often repeated scenarios where women and minority are steered away from certain jobs. We've talked many times about James McCoon Smith, who could not become a doctor in America because no medical school would accept. Now, you would think that if white doctors didn't want to treat black people, that they would at least encourage black doctors. But no, that wasn't the way that it worked. He went to the University of Glasgow in Scotland, earned 3 degrees, had and in or near the top of his class in every one of them. His practice or his training continued in France, so we know he at least spoke 2 languages. As we look at this, despite all of the information that we get that black people are not capable, that so many are incapable, oftentimes when slaves ran away, the billing that went as they tried to capture their property included many of these skills, and also the fact that many people were fluent in more than one language. Every person that came over here and owned slaves was not English. Some of them came from other European countries, and they spoke that language, and they may get traded somewhere else, and they learn that language. Sometimes these people could speak fluently in multiple languages. Does that sound like somebody that's dumb and stupid to you? No, it does not. But yet and still, we're putting these encumbrances on people who are trying to do this. And so we find that she pursued this, and she later joined her father in practice in Poughkeepsie before accepting employment with the New York City Corporation Counsel's Office. Moved there to practice, and then moved from there to practice with her husband, Ralph E. Mizell. He became a member of the President Franklin's cabinet. He had a black cabinet. Unfortunately, he passed in 1943. She had one son and later married Walter P. Offit, Jr., who was a minister, and unfortunately, he died in 1974. So despite these tragedies, she is still trudging on. She is still a judge. She is still doing what she can. And at that time, she was 31 years of age and was appointed a judge in the Domestic Relations Court, which is now essentially family court, by Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia. We're talking about a long time ago. And we still don't know about her. Why? Because as we will see in just a moment, she could encourage other people to do as she has done. And she did. And she was in that court for 40 years, finally forced to step down because of the mandatory retirement age. She racially integrated child services, ensuring probation officers were signed without regard to race or religion, and that public funded child care accept children without regard to ethnic backgrounds. Many people were left on the sidelines because of these policies, and sometimes when people wouldn't take them, they floundered. Again, you can see how what we are doing is making it worse and worse on a particular set of people. Why? It's not because they can't learn. It's not because of anything other than a preconceived notion of what your skin color does for or against you. And it's not right. It is not right by any stretch of the imagination. And she was active in other groups, such as the Negro Women and the NAACP, the National Urban League, Citywide Citizens Committee of Harlem, and the Child Welfare League. She resigned from the NAACP over opposition to McCarthyism. As we look and as we talk about many of the events that have happened in the old days, and if we talk about political parties, they are essentially a complete reversal of what we have today. Republicans were those people that supported equal rights for all people. Democrats generally were strong in the South and opposed that. They opposed it. Now, we went through a period, and it's not my intent to use that as our role model for today, but we had the Dixiecrats and whatever, and later they became the Republicans and and people that we currently now see as Democrats shifted to the Democratic Party. But what we have to keep in mind, we're not voting for a party label. We're voting for people who can advance our ideas and those things that are best in our interest. And that goes for everybody across the board, regardless of gender, ethnic background, age, or whatever. Vote for the person that can do the most for you. And I think that we've seen that. After retirement, she also taught at a school, a special school for black boys in New York, and received honorary degrees from Tuskegee Institute, Williams College, Hampton University, Western College for Women, and Morgan State University. Well recognized. All of this, why don't we know about her? This fits into one of those categories. Don't talk about achievements. They do talk about achievements, but basically they come down to the fact that we can sing and dance and we can play sports. But even that is a lie, because the National Football League was integrated, went white for 12 years before four players were brought in. And the only reason that happened at that time is because the Los Angeles Rams had built a stadium with taxpayer dollars in Los Angeles, and people protested using segregated activities in a public domain. They hired two. The Cleveland Browns hired two. And that was in 1946. And the significance of that, we don't hear about that, but we do hear what happened in 1947. Jackie Robinson integrated baseball. Single player. Was not the best, but he was the best person for that job, because he had to endure lots of hostility, even from teammates. And this shows you what people had to endure. She played a role in inspiring a person that many of us also don't know about. And that person is Constance Baker Motley, another lawyer, was influenced by Jane Poland. What did Constance Baker Motley do? You've heard of the case of Brown v. Board of Education, which reversed the separate but equal policy and allowed for much of the progress that we enjoy today. Constance Baker Motley wrote the brief for that case, the skeleton, the framework of that case. Not only did she do that, but she integrated the University of Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana. She was a fighter, a person of great renown, of great ability, of courage, and a willingness to put herself on the line. She was a great. She finally became a judge. She inspired other judges. One of them, we hopefully everybody knows. Ketanji Brown Jackson, the only black female to sit on the Supreme Court of the United States of America, recently elected. She was a big fan of Constance Baker Motley. Motley was a big fan of Jane Boland. So we see one of the reasons that we don't talk about the success, because we don't want it repeated. When many of the slaves came over, they were stripped of their name and given another name that the master liked. And that also broke the roots, broke the bond of what takes place and how we can track it. Now, I will start featuring in these posts, because in these posts, I don't want you to just get a short summary like we've gone over. But I want you to be able to dig deeper. I want some of you to become inspired and do research on these people. See if you agree with me, disagree with me, or there are other changes that may take place. As we do this, we expand our knowledge. We expand the value that we place on people. And this is what I want to say. I'm not saying that white people are all bad, because they are not. Even in the South, not everyone supported slavery. And not everyone in the North opposed it. We had almost a cacophony of sounds when it comes to people talking about what they believed. But in so many cases, people were intimidated and refused to speak out because they knew the harm that could come to them and others. But despite that, we had many people that boldly stood. We get into a room and we think that every white person there descended from slave owners. When we look at the statistics, that's not necessarily the case. There are many rich people, rich families, old money, that depended upon that practice. But there were many people that did not. We sometimes conflate this, and sometimes even to the point of saying slavery was good because black people owned slaves. Black people in this country have owned slaves. But let me tell you why. Not many of them did it for the same reason as the whites, which was to become rich off of the labor of someone else. Many times, if you held papers on somebody, they were your property, and they could not take them. Many times, people that were free purchased relatives. They may even purchase a wife. They may even purchase offspring, and they held papers to them. Nobody could take them. But if they were emancipated, they could be taken. So we have to look at this for what it is. Many people have never heard of this concept in their entire life. Why? Because we don't teach it. We don't want people to know how brutal we were during the days of slavery. We don't want that. Because if we put a face on these people and we show what we've done, it could be embarrassing. So the thing is, let sleeping dogs lie. Don't talk about it. Don't put the information out. And we have gotten to the point today that we are still afraid of facing the truth. And what makes it so difficult? What makes it difficult for me is to see people like me who don't know their history. You can't stand up and say that is not true, because we weren't taught what was true. We weren't taught the capability of what we have done. This, ladies and gentlemen, is why On this show and on Amazing Black History, we feature many, many unknown facts. And they're not just for black people, because there are people that are looking at me as if I couldn't pour water out of a bucket without knowing what I have done. I don't want to make what I have done the center of our discussion, because that's not the purpose. My purpose is so that you, your children, your family, your neighbors, and everybody knows what you are capable of doing. And that includes you yourself. We've run into a brick wall, and we try it again and again and again and again. We see many times, or we used to see many times, the circus would come to town. They would have elephants. These are powerful animals, powerful animals. And you would see them with a metal ring around their foot and a stake driven into the ground. Do you know how long that stake would hold an elephant if he decided to run, or he or she decided to run away? They wouldn't even know that it was there. So how did they get to that point? When they are young, there's a giant stake driven deep into the ground, and they are allowed to pull against it with all of their might. And they soon learn this doesn't work. So all they have to do is think that they can't. To think that they can't, I want you to take a moment and listen to my words. Because when you think you can't, you can't. When you think you can, you can. I want you to realize that this year we had a lady return from the International Space Station, a black female. Spent 6 months on the International Space Station. How many of you know about that? I mean, this is 2022, and yet we still don't want people to know about stories like this. I make an effort to provide this information. I want you to share the program that we have here. I want you to share AmazingBlackHistory.com, because it gives you pride in knowing what you're capable of doing. We find that the Marianas Trench in the Pacific Ocean is deeper than Mount Everest is tall. Do you realize that we've had a black female doctor go to that lowest point in the world? What else can keep us down? Our mind. We must free it. They didn't want us to learn to read or write, because you cannot enslave the body of a person whose mind is free. I hope that some of you get to watch the program on PBS, The Making of Frederick Douglass. Powerful, powerful. He was sent to the house to perform labor for the people of the house. I think it was in Baltimore. He became skilled at caulking, which was vital to the boating industry. But along the way, he overheard discussions about why they didn't want black people to read or write. And he made it his goal, his stated goal, to learn so that he could be free. Understand, this is a point I want you to pass on to all of your children, all of your neighbors, everybody that you know. Stand up on the rooftop and shout it to the world. Because we have suffered from that. We've suffered mightily from that. When we look at Ketanji Brown Jackson, when the case came up, one of the cases that came up before them, had to do with civil rights. And they are now saying, they, meaning those people that oppose it, that what we are doing, we have to be race neutral. We cannot give any preference to anybody, anybody, no matter how bad we have trampled on them, trampled on people, their rights, their ancestors. And yet and still, we now say that it has to be neutral. Ketanji Brown Jackson pointed out these laws were put there not to be race neutral, but to give back to those that had suffered. Now, it takes a young judge to do this. When we look at the makeup of the Supreme Court, we find that only 3 of the current 9 judges even went to public school. We have a bunch of snobs making decisions on things that happen in everyday life. Do you know how many people on the Supreme Court have ever defended a defendant? 1. Ketanji Brown Jackson. The other people, all they have done is prosecuted. This is what you call ivory tower thinking. How? How is that going to work, my friends? Are they going to understand me? Are they going to understand you? Are they going to understand our community? Are they going to understand anything except being an egghead in an ivory tower making decisions that affect everybody? This, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, is what we need to combat. Let me give a word to the younger listeners, and I do appreciate each and every one of you, and those of you that have young people that may be interested in subjects here. Let them know about this. This is not material that we cannot share. You don't hear a lot of cursing, swearing, or anything else, but you still see motivational ideas. You see those ideas that can inspire people, and this is what we're doing. And when that inspiration comes, it doesn't just fit black men, black women. And at one time in our history, we have mistreated Italians, Germans, Polish people, and don't forget our dear brothers, the Native Americans, who owned all of this land before they were confined to 0.1% of their own land. When we look at remedial actions that are being taken, we look back to an expression we don't hear very much. But those slaves said, give me 40 acres. 40 acres and a mule is what's commonly heard. And when we look back at that law, it does mention up to 40 acres of land. The mule is not included in that law. But what happened is many times families were given excess mules by the U.S. Army. Why didn't we take full advantage of that? Remember, when the 15th Amendment was passed, Abraham Lincoln was the president and basically guaranteed suffrage to black men, suffrage meaning the ability to vote was given to black men. A conspiracy was hatched in which they were going to kill the president, the vice president, and speaker of the House, the first 3 people in power in representation. Only one was killed, and that was the president. So why did things go awry? Andrew Johnson was a Southerner, and as the land was being passed out, he repealed that. Why it's important who we vote for. Not just speaking to people of color, I'm speaking to everyone. There are many people that are outraged with what's going on, but they dare not stand up and speak. Because in the old days, one of the worst things you could call a white person was an N-word lover. I don't think I need to make mention of what that word was. Some people think that it's funny. I do not. I think it's the greatest insult, because as I watched around, some of the most educated people in positions of powers, even when told something else, would refer to as niggers, as if they could not pronounce Negro. I know what they were doing. You know what they were doing. They knew what they were doing. I chose to call myself black because I'm closer to being black than they are to being white. When you want to think of the idea of being white, I heard a white person say something to another white person that really stuck with me, that they were fish belly white. What is that? Look at a fish when you've caught, brim, crappie, whatever, and look at the belly. Now that's white. Do you see people that color except for Casper, the friendly ghost, to somebody else? No, you don't. Now, we got into calling people racist again because Gomes de Zurara, a Portuguese, as they started into the slaving. Now, when we go back and look at the word slave, black people weren't included. Why? Because it goes back to the Slavic countries. White people were making slaves of white people. This is a horrible, horrible situation to be in. But as we look at it, we see people that don't want to be identified with any of that. And we see people that are afraid to speak up. Afraid to speak up. When we look at Berkeley County, South Carolina, and we see the length that they will go to make sure that true history is never taught to their son or daughter who may feel uncomfortable. Let me tell you what uncomfortable means and what it feels like. There are two incidents that made me understand. On the trip to California, I was visiting a friend, and we went to the site of Sutter's Mill. And incidentally, Sutter's Mill is where gold was discovered in California. Set off a gold rush. Everybody was coming to California in 1849. Hence, we have, like football teams, the 49ers. As I went down that pathway that is now a highway, into the city, we were talking about how so many people were coming. If you had to pull your wagon out of line to do something, it may be another day before you got back in line. Everybody was searching there. And I'm thinking, my gosh, this is nothing but a bunch of white folks trying to be rich. It was September. In fact, it was September the 11th. Of 2012. And this weather was gorgeous, but kids had gone back to school. The attendance at the park was low. I don't know why, because usually I'm so shy and backwards that I don't ask questions that I want to know the answers to. But I am there with the curator. It's he and I, at this point, all to ourselves. And I remember the question. I said, were there any black people here that made a significant contribution to what was going on? And I remember emphasizing significant, because I didn't want to hear about old Sam sweeping out the tavern at 3 o'clock in the morning. I knew that I'd asked the right person, because a shy smile came over his face. And he told me about Nancy Monroe Gooch. This family owned hundreds of acres of land in Sutter's Mill. They had an orchard and sold fruit wholesale all over the state of California. Only that. But at the time of her death, she actually owned the original site of Sutter's Mill. Her kids used to make a few coins showing people where you could see flecks of gold in the water. These are black people. This is back in the 1849s. And I'm thinking everybody is back here planting and picking, and other people are getting rich on their labor. Let me give you the other. I went to Denver, Colorado. I'd been there in 1960 with the Boy Scouts. There were some interesting things that happened on that trip, too. But when I went back this time, I noticed some information that had not mattered to me before, because I became introduced to a person by the name of Aunt Clara Brown. Look at the post on her. Clara Brown. And she was a person, a slave who had gone to that area because she heard the black people were prospering. And she became very, very wealthy. Very wealthy. In fact, she has helped build three churches that still stand today. If you go to the Capitol and go to the Supreme Court, there is a stained glass memorial to Clara Brown. Now, you've heard the stories that black people didn't have souls. You've heard people say that black people don't have emotions or anything else. Clara Brown was on the East Coast, and she was guiding her children through a flood, and one of them was taken away and drowned. The other survived, but they lost touch. And Clara Brown wanted to do everything that she could to reunite with that child that was still surviving. When she came from St. Louis to Denver, she had money for a stagecoach ticket, but they would not sell her a ticket, again, because of the color of her skin. Smart, not necessarily book smart, but smart. She watched the wagon trains as they went through and waited until she saw a person that seemed particularly kind. And she made a deal with him that she would cook on their entire trip. So she had to get up early. She had to stay up late. At the age of 60, she walked every step of the way from St. Louis to Denver, every step of the way, because nobody would give her a ride. In fact, she had to listen constantly to a particularly verbose person that was so put out by the fact that they even had a person of color traveling with him. This is what people had to go through, and yet we survived. When Clara Brown was there, every wagon train coming through, she would approach people to see if anybody ever heard anything about her daughter. She had in her home Sunday school. She tended to sick people in her home. They had to change the law in California to allow her to be recognized, because that law said that the only pioneers of Colorado were white. That law was changed because she made such an impact to allow her to be a pioneer in Colorado. When I went there last, the Supreme Court was being remodeled, and they had a bedspread or whatever, and she was featured on the center of that in the Capitol. Before I left the Capitol, I found another stained glass memorial in the House of Representatives to Barney Lancelot Ford. You can look him up on my site as well. But he was such a businessman that there is still building, at least one building standing in Denver today that he built back then. He mined for gold, found gold, but the law would not let him claim his finding. He could not register his claim. He dealt with a white lawyer, a crooked white lawyer. Filed the claim, but filed it in the lawyer's name, and then had the sheriff kick him off the land. He has, I believe it's in Breckenridge or whatever, there is a lot of things there because he had a house. He used to play a trick on people sometimes because he would sneak out of the woods. They always thought that he had hidden a bunch of gold. But he knew a way that he could throw them off and come back into town, and they would still be looking. I think it was probably in the 1960s where they were following him was known as N-Word Hill on the official maps. On the official maps. This shows how deeply hatred is. But when we find people like Jane Boland, Constance Baker Motley, who can inspire people like Ketanji Brown Jackson, we see that instead of trying to fit in, we should be standing out. We should be there because we've got the talent to do it. We know what we're doing. The very idea of vaccination was introduced into this country by a slave called Onesimus, owned by Cotton Mather. And when they took this crude method that was being done in Africa, this place where there is supposed to be no civilization, no understanding, no knowledge, no anything, those people that received that treatment that he had prescribed, they talked the doctor into doing this. We were seeing people from smallpox die at a rate of 14 out of 100. Those that received the treatment that he talked about, 2 out of 100. And yet and still we allow this mantle of dumbness, of shame to fall over us, to keep us down. That's what it is. Now I'm going to open the microphone in just a minute or two here. Again, if you have not called in, I don't see you. You may be listening on your device. You may be listening through the link, and that's fine. We love you. You do not have to change over. The only advantage is that I can see you on my dashboard, and we can get you into the conversation. That number, again, is 646-668-8217. I want you to know that Jane Boland was a pioneer, discouraged at every turn from pursuing her passion. Schools wouldn't accept her. And when she got in, she was discouraged. Oh, don't do that because you'll never succeed at that. How many of us have ever heard that? When we look at Malcolm X, Malcolm X was a brilliant student. He was brilliant throughout his life, but he wanted to be a lawyer. Everybody said, no, you got to be a carpenter or something. That's what black people do. How many of us have been turned around? No longer should we be turned around. No longer is that acceptable. The best thing that we can do is to encourage others. Encourage others to be the best that they can. I look at these children that are coming up now. Lord knows we ain't giving them a whole bunch of home training, but somewhere in that group is going to be the cure to Alzheimer's. Somewhere in that group are going to be those advantages that move us forward. NASA is already looking at putting a black man and a black woman on the moon. We can't get there if we are doing our dumb thing. we get there because we are qualified. And I want to pass this on to the younger listeners. When it comes to your work in school, do what you have to do before you do what you want to do. Make it a habit to get your lessons done. You'll have less stress in your life. You don't have to go to school worrying that the bus is going to get you in there in time so that you can do, during the first period, your work for the second period. You've already got it done. Easy. Lay back. Always do that. Not only will that carry you through school and the possibility of scholarships, but it will serve you well if you work for someone. And particularly what I encourage you to do, if you are so inclined, is to build your own business. Anybody heard of Robert Smith? Robert Smith is the richest black man in the world. He paid off the debt for college students. I believe it won the universities in Atlanta. And he is encouraging other companies to use 2% of their money to help rectify this problem. And yet and still we have people that don't even want us to be taught that we have a history and that that history goes back. Hasn't been that long ago that we had a post on Timbuktu. It's not a joke. It's not funny. It was the center of learning for many years. And if you study the ancient Greeks, many people think that's where civilization and learning started. But the ancient Greeks sent their best to Africa to learn. Africa, that place that many of us are ashamed of. Africa. No, do not be ashamed. Take pride. I'm going to talk about the Ashingo bone coming up. What we have is relics of civilization that date back 3,000-4,000 years ago. The Ashingo bone found in Central Africa shows that they had an understanding of mathematics 18,000 to 20,000 years ago. 18,000 to 20,000 years ago. Europeans were hiding in caves at that point. But yet and still, we buy into this knowledge because we don't know. We don't know. We embarrass ourselves with what we don't know. My mission is to make sure that you know. As we are opening our microphones now, this is your opportunity if you have comments, suggestions, or whatever, bring them up. I appreciate your comments. I don't want to spend all this time with just me talking. And you don't have to agree with me. That's not what this is. But it's open. I see my good friend Marshall has joined me again today. We have a couple of other people that I think may be willing to make comments. Let's hear from you. Marshall, are you there?
Yes, sir. How you doing today, Mr. Abercrombie?
I'm doing well, and every time you're in the audience, it makes me even better.
And I'll put out everything I know and have seen and has heard to just to get to listen to you. And hopefully some of our good people will do likewise, because I'm planning now, even right now, that just coming February that Mr. Abercrombie, and I'm telling other people, if you want somebody to do your hit black history, please get Mr. Abercrombie. You have inspired me so much in your teaching and all, and I've learned, so it gives me pride in knowing. It helps me know who I am. We are somebody. Now, my daddy told me that. He told me that, and he told my two brothers, or the three boys, he told us all that, and we all learned from that that it doesn't. He told us that you are no better than nobody else, but you just as good as anybody. Now, that's one thing that always Yes, you know better than no one else, but you're just as good as anybody. And that's all our young people, that's what they need to hear. That's what they need to know.
Right, right.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You certainly has inspired me, and we are working again with the cemetery out at Florence Chapel. We'll meet again Saturday morning, and I think that will be the last one for this year. And hopefully with all of the recoveries covering and all of the grades and all that, we'll come up with something that will be beneficial to the community and all that they can understand a little bit better about who's who and what was done and who did it and why it was done. We don't know. So we have a specialist, Mr. McKeith. He's hanging right in there, and we're doing some wonderful things out there at Wofford. And we continue to try to get our alumni together. And I think we're going to have to put that on hold until next year. There's a group out of Columbia that is meeting at City Hall in Wofford. And it's not the people from the City Hall. It's another group. And they're finding out about what should be done in Wofford because they want to build a new City Hall because they say that one has mold in it. I told them, you know, home there were mold in it, and to the go to Lowe's and buy the stuff that you put in there and paint it and everything. And I said, that's been 4 years ago. It hasn't seen mold no more. You mean we need another station here, police department, just because you found mold? So that's done away with. They won't do that. So we're hoping that we can. Somebody going to have to speak up. Somebody. That's one thing I'm saying to all of our people. Step up and speak out. If you don't, we're going to be left right behind like always. Nobody won't say anything. So make people think you comfortable with where you are.
Exactly.
Thank you, Mr. Abercrombie.
And I'll tell you the story that I heard a long time ago, clean it up as much as I can. We have a bee that's flying in a pasture, and it lights on a piece of grass. Cow comes along and eats that grass, and the bumblebee wakes up later and he's in his mouth, but he doesn't get chewed up. He said, you know what? As soon as I get down a little further, I'm going to sting you, and I'll get out of here. Well, when he gets down, you know, cow's got four stomachs. He goes in the first one. I'll wait just a little bit longer. A little bit longer. And when he finally woke up, he was in a pile of stuff, and the cow was gone. And if we don't get involved, that's where we're going to be. We're going to be in that stuff up to our necks, and the cow's going to be gone. Now,
exactly.
We've got an apostle, I believe, on here. I don't know if he's commenting or not today. Are you there, sir? Brother Armstrong, are you around? Maybe not. See, we
Shalom.
Have another number from me. Shalom. There you are.
Shalom, sir. Blessings. I've been taking this information in, and I know I spoke to you mentioned to you last week about that name, Ballard. I have one's a grandson and one's a great-grandson. Both of them are 18 years old, and I have been talking to them to instill in them that they don't have to go down the road that I went down. You know, I was drug addict for so many years and homeless and, you know, deserted my family and everything. And God, he put me back where he restored me, where I should have been all along. So I'm feeding them this information here that I told them about the show. Hopefully I get them to call in to take some notes because I told them they can start now and build themselves up to be, you know, one of the most powerful there ever was. They're young and they're
true.
And then they're smart now, and they can get a head start on this thing because the way the world is going, the governments of the world or, you know, doing all this stuff, you know, people are being controlled. They're being put under control to do whatever they want them to do. But if I can get these young men Like I said, they're both 18. If I can get them interested and involved, and then, you know, whatever they have within them can be brought out at an early age, you know, and they still have
right.
that freedom, still have liberty in this country, and as I said, they can become one of the greatest there ever was, men of color, you know.
Right. Yeah, we've
yes,
done
sir.
It all. Now, to those people that may not be familiar with that name, there's a book, All Blood Runs Red. And
All
we
Blood
often
Red, yeah.
don't think that we had black pilots until World War II with the Tuskegee Airmen. But we
mm-hmm.
did have a hero in World War I, and that was
mm-hmm.
Eugene Bullard, or Bullard, or however you want to pronounce the name. That's kind of like Stephen Colbert and his sister, Susan Colbert. Same thing, whatever, different pronunciation. But the important thing is that he learned, he stowed away on a ship in Norfolk and went to Europe and learned German on the way. He went down, fought for the French because the Americans weren't necessarily doing it. And he had heard that the French were not as aggressive on this. In fact, when we had troops in World War I, we had the 369th, 370th, and 371st. And I know we've
mm-hmm.
had Medal of Honor winners come out of the 371st, Freddie Stowers, the 369th, Henry Johnson. And
mm-hmm.
upset the white soldiers so much was hearing praise by the French for the black officers that were over
right.
there defending their country. And so
mm-hmm.
this is what we've had. And we have to realize that we have it within us. Now, even when we started World War II and had the Tuskegee Airmen, any Army person could join the Flying Corps, except if you were black. You had
mm-hmm.
to have a
right.
college degree in order
mm-hmm.
to join. Now, when they
yeah.
escorted the bombers, the Red Tails escorted the bombers, they never lost a plane they were escorting. That didn't mean
mm-hmm.
that some of them did not die. But
right.
they were courageous. They were on point. What often happened is the white soldiers seeking glory for themselves would peel out of the formation and try to
mm-hmm.
become Ace Rickenbacker or something and
themselves.
Lose the plane.
Yeah.
When these great men of flying skills came back, they couldn't be employed in flying for the airlines
mm-hmm.
because somebody
mm-hmm.
said one of the passengers may not like it.
My yeah.
idea, I've got a pilot. That pilot is qualified. If you want to go, you can go. If you don't, you can hoof it, ball. I care. But we have to get to the point where we understand who and what we are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the purpose of the program.
Yes, sir.
Any comments from 864?
Mr. Abercrombie, Marshal James again. This week I heard on the Black Information Network there was some black women, and they was working, I think, in the Army, and it was the 6AAA. I've never heard
yes,
of that before, the 6AAA. Now, what type of mission were you, and I'm sure you, I just hadn't heard, what type of mission, do you familiar with that? What type of a mission were they on, and what were they doing?
Okay, I do have a post on the 6AAAs.
Oh,
they
my
were
goodness.
All,
so much. Thank
they were
you.
All black units. With the exception, I think there was one Hispanic woman that identified as black. And what happened is they were unable to get mail delivered into the war theater. And so they took this all-black troop. It was a mess over there because mail wasn't getting delivered. People were sending cookies and cakes and everything, and the rats were getting in it. And it was just an absolute mess. And under the terms, they thought that it was going to take a year or more to get things done. But these women went over there with the motto, no mail, low morale. No mail, low morale. And they cleaned it all up. So they were stationed in Europe. Now, the place where they were working was unheated. In fact, when they got that cleaned up in miraculous time, they were sent further overseas. But they performed, in fact, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that there are a handful of them that are still living. There was a guy by the name of Carlton Philpott who has put together a lot of information on them and other black troops. William Cathay is actually Cathay Williams and is the only documented female Buffalo soldier. So, you know, we have done some stuff to get into wars to protect, thinking that we could come home and have earned a bit of respect. But the number of people that have been killed and maimed in the U.S. government uniform is astonishing. Right here in South Carolina, we had Sergeant Isaac Woodard stationed at Camp Fort Gordon in Georgia, coming home after being mustered out in uniform. And when they stopped in Batesville, he wanted to use the restroom. And the bus driver cursed him. Well, he cursed him right back. And the sheriff came on and gouged both of his eyes out. Nothing ever happened to the sheriff. We have endured those types of discriminatory actions for years. But it starts with understanding who we are, what we are, that we have contributed to this country. You know, when you don't hear about people like Ann Boland and Constance Baker Motley, something is awful foul in this country, awful. And it's us, those that are listening, to make sure that we pass on this information because it is that important. It is that important. Yeah, Wesley, sometimes we'll have to get a 3 or 4-way phone call and talk about this and get them on.
That sounds great.
Now, I hear we've got about 90 seconds before we need to wrap it up. I invite all that are listening today to come back next week, same time. I don't know our subject yet, but I promise you that it will be an interesting subject for all. To all of you who called in, greatly appreciated. I love you all. To those that are listening on tonight, you just as well. Be blessed,
yes.
My friends. Be blessed. And I hope
yes.
to see you again
Abercrombie.
Next
Love
week.
You.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Shalom.
Yes. Shalom. Goodbye.